amazing friends, Iceman and Firestar. Amazing friends.
Welcome to Comic Culture on 93.3 CFMU and podcast at comicbookdaily.com. I'm your host, Walter DeRaglia, joined as always by my host, by my co-host, Chris Owen, professor of comic history at Hamilton's Mohawk College. Chris.
Walter, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Chris. You?
Fantastic. And you know what's even more fantastic is today we are joined by a very special guest from the National Cartoon Society. He may be, correct me if I'm wrong, but his name is Life Peng. That is P-E-N-G. And Life, it's fantastic to have you here.
Thanks very much, guys. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Yeah, we're very excited, Life, because we're going to ask you a whole ton of things later on in the show about cartooning and all that kind of stuff. But we're going to ask you at the beginning to participate with us in the regular flow of the show. So just jump in with your opinions or your comments on anything Chris and I talk about. And please, cut Chris off when he rambles.
And please do, yes.
Okay, it's a deal. All right.
and of course, we do ramble quite a bit, so and you're more than welcome to cut in as often as you want.
Life, we start every show with highlighting, today being Wednesday, and Wednesday, as you know, I'm sure, is the day that the new comics hit the stands. So fans are running into their local comic shops today, checking out what's new. And Chris and I like to highlight stuff that maybe they should be aware of.
Running in.
Oh, running.
Yeah. Running.
I'm getting my running shoes on right now, guys.
Yeah, I'm sure because most comic book fans are quite athletic, too.
All right, now, if only I can find the paper I have this on. Here it is.
There you go.
Here it is. Guys, today, Flash number 5, Brightest Day, Geoff Johns writing, hits the stands today for DC.
Geoff Johns. Now, of course, you know, why is it that I'm getting a little tired, not that I don't like Green Lantern, but I am getting a little tired of Green Lantern and the whole Brightest Day, Blackest Night, Darkest Night. Yeah, wait, I think that was a Batman thing. But anyways, you know, aren't we getting a little sick of the whole Green Lantern thing?
You know what? We may be, Chris, but we may not be. The sales from the last time I checked, the sales, the whole Green Lantern is still, I think next to Batman, I think Green Lantern is the biggest selling DC title, which is unheard of because titles like Superman should be selling more than Green Lantern.
Well, that really is unheard of, but that just goes to show you what the power of Geoff Johns' writing ability is all about, right? I mean, he has taken second-tier characters for a number of years now and been able to recreate them so that they're very popular for today's audience, right?
Now, hold on. Life. Is the character or is the writer – now, I mean, from your perspective, here you have obviously a trend where the fans of comics are following the writer from character to character, and it's influencing, say, the sales of that character. So obviously the writer is he larger than the character?
Wow, that's a good question. I mean, we've seen some huge writers over the years, and I mean, to my mind, Alan Moore, for instance, is a no-fail writer. You could put him on anything. I mean, look at what he did with all the Image books. Yes. You know, there was that time when those comics came out, they had their initial burst of success because of the art, and then quickly fans started to abandon them when they realized they were nothing but pinups. There was no story.
Right.
And then basically they came in, they brought Alan Moore in, and he saved a bunch of books that were failing because of his writing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the big books that he saved was Supreme, which was sort of like a Superman-type character, Rob Liefeld rip-off type thing. And certainly Alan Moore absolutely saved that character.
So what we're saying here, guys,
yes,
is that the writer is bigger than the character in some ways.
He can be.
He can be.
Yeah,
right.
It sounds
it
like in
be.
This case, right. Once again.
But I'm going to add in that the character will always outlive the writer. Especially on a character, say, like Superman and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think especially when you have iconic characters like Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, you know, you're going to have these characters that are going to stand the test of time. I don't know if you can kill a character with a bad writer, but you certainly can make a bad character better with a good writer.
Good point.
Well, another great example going back to Alan Moore is Swamp Thing.
Yes, and, you're right. You know, you're absolutely right.
And did that comic really survive the writer? I would say not really.
Yeah, you got a good point.
You know, when Alan Moore left, the book pretty much died.
Yeah, you have a good point.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, and it's a very good point. You know what? It's great to have a real professional on the show for a change, don't you think?
For a change.
Hey, all right. Happy to help out.
Chris, I want to highlight Hit Monkey number 3.
What the heck is Hit Monkey number 3?
I'm about to explain it to you guys.
Hit Monkey. Right. Now, is it about hitting monkeys?
No.
I'm just curious.
It very well could be.
Is it about spanking monkeys?
No. But it very well should be, maybe. Okay, Hit Monkey. It's about a monkey that basically kills assassins.
Okay, so hold on. So it's like a hitman, but he's a monkey.
Right, right.
But he only goes after assassins.
But he only goes after assassins.
And not other monkeys?
Not other monkeys or just lay people.
Right? Lay
or
people.
Lay monkeys.
Lay monkeys.
Not the average monkey.
No. But hey, listen, come on. Hit Monkey number 3 comes out today. And it basically quickly, because it's about a monkey that a tribe of monkeys in Japan took in some sort of a guy that was on the lam from assassins. And this one monkey learned a lot from this assassin. But then these assassins came in and they killed all the monkeys and that guy that was hiding from the assassins. And now this one monkey that survived has a vendetta against all assassins.
Now, hold on. Now, are the assassins also monkeys?
No.
Oh.
Hell no.
Oh.
So it's or just, heck no.
Heck
sorry.
No. Gosh no. So hold on. So it's just monkeys, this one monkey that happens to have a vendetta against assassins.
Okay, look. I'm going to put us all out of our misery here.
I'm just curious.
Hit Monkey number 3 hits the stands today. And go out and check it out. Or at least, you know, good comic shops, guys. Good comic shops
yes.
will let the person, the customer,
yes.
stand at the New This Week shelf and peruse through comics.
Are you telling our loyal listeners that they should go to their local comic book stores and read in the comic book store? And
no,
not actually
no, they could leaf through and peruse.
Ah.
Now, like when you go to a comic book store and you are not sure what to read, do you just kind of buy it off the cover or do you open it up and leaf through it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I do leaf through it. But really good comic stores have Lazy Boy chairs and fireplaces. where you can lounge for hours.
Yes.
And read all the comics.
Yes. Really good stories. Yeah.
Life is from Toronto. All right. Guys, Darkwing Duck number 4.
Right.
Hits the stands today.
Now, that was a Disney cartoon years ago, and it actually had a comic years ago as well. And but now it's been brought back. And so, I'm sorry, I wasn't even paying attention to when you said. What number is it at?
Hello?
Is this thing on?
This thing on.
I'm sorry, I wasn't really paying attention.
It's at number 4.
4, okay.
Which I'm sure is close to some anniversary of some sort. but now that we have life on, now, I mean, you are involved in the industry, you are involved in so many aspects of the industry.
Right.
Are comic publishers doing their job in getting the kids reading comics and taking them through into more advanced comics?
Well, that's a good question, and what I wonder is whether kids still read comics, and especially comics that are from a traditional sort of North American direction, like a Disney kind of comic, or if they're more interested in reading manga-type comics than the traditional stuff. I mean, you'd be able to tell us, Walt, because you're watching closely what kind of stuff moves in the store. When families come in, when kids come in, what do they gravitate to these days?
You're absolutely right. There is a kind of a generation gap, if you want to call it. There's actually a conflict, and Chris and I have discussed this before in the store, is, you know, the dad is saying, hey, buddy, hey, kid, hey, son, Why don't you pick up Scooby or pick up, you know, Disney? Or mom will say, hey, why don't you pick up Archie? And the kids will say, I want SpongeBob. Or I want Naruto. Right. And the kid, and then the parents don't understand SpongeBob. They don't understand Naruto. And I think there's a disconnect there. And the progressive parents, but there are some parents that will say, yes, you know, why don't you, as long as you're reading, as long as you're enjoying it, fine. But there are other parents that are hardcore traditionalists that will say, hey, I think you'll really enjoy Donald Duck.
Yeah.
The flippin' Donald Duck, right?
Well, hey, listen, I don't know if this is going to give you some additional insight, but my wife teaches in the primary grades. And one of the things that's hugely popular with her students around grade 4 or 5 level, believe it or not, is Bone.
Oh, Bone is huge. Yes,
still,
you're absolutely
to this day,
right. Yeah.
And Scholastic Books actually puts it out now.
Bone is huge. Yeah. Now, Bone is one of the things that Bone is one of the things, though. It's a property life that
it's a book. It's not a thing.
Right. Bone is one of the books, though, that falls between the cracks in the sense that neither the kids or the parents really know about it when they walk in. So a parent will walk in with that Scooby and Mickey Mouse mentality. The kid will walk in because of TV with that SpongeBob or Naruto mentality or Yu-Gi-Oh mentality. And Bone is one of the books where the purveyors of the comic store say, hey, you really have to try this.
Right.
It's good for the parent and good for the kid. So.
And I think that because it's published by Scholastic, I mean, Scholastic is kind of known for Scholastic books, right? Like, I mean, the fact that it's published by Scholastic, it's a good indication that it might be good for kids and the educational system, right?
And the other thing that, I don't know, might give you some insight, because I actually teach sequential art at Mohawk College. In the foundation studies program in graphic design. So we get a lot of younger students who are coming more directly from, you know, a high school age. And first thing I ask them is, what kind of comics did you read growing up? And believe it or not, good old Archie still gets a lot of votes.
Love it. Love it. Excellent. Chris, did you write that down?
I wrote that down, yes.
All right.
Archie, right, gotcha.
All right.
It means I should talk more about Archie in my comic history course.
Yes.
Yes.
Guys, we are going to leave because we have a busy show. Life is here with us. We're going to leave new this week. And I have to mention, though, because I've forgotten like I did last week, Chris, I have to mention that new this week, we have a sponsor for new this week. And new this week was brought to you by I have Amagato Eye Drops. When you need eyes to see that which is unseen, your only choice is Eye of Agamotto.
I don't think you could butcher.
Agamotto Eye Drops. Eye of Agamotto Eye Drops. Pick them up at your local pharmacy.
Doctor Strange is spinning in his inner sanctum right
now. I don't think you could have butchered that anymore. But you know what? Talking about butchering, I got a great song for you guys coming up here. And I know you've heard it before. Let's just hear it again. This is, of course, Jimmy Olsen.
Now who's the man behind the man, behind the mighty Superman? Oh, who's the guy he can rely on?
Right, Jimmy Olsen.
Jimmy boy,
Mama Olsen's pride and joy.
Mama Olsen's pride and joy. Someday I'm going.
Yeah, Chris, that's nice. Now, the first impression I get of that song is like, okay, the guys, after they sing that, after that session's over, they got to like head to some blues joint or something to drink that all down.
Well, you know what? That song just keeps on going, doesn't it?
That's a great song. Yeah. Great song. Great. Chris, and for somehow, I don't know how, but it's a great, great segue.
It really is a great segue.
Into industry news. Yeah. And now, I know our producer was busy with getting sponsors for industry news, people that actually pay checks to get their plug in on industry news.
We're actually getting paid for this?
I haven't seen a check yet, but apparently it's coming.
Okay.
And we're going to let Life introduce the sponsor for Industry News today.
All right. And Industry News is brought to you by Arkham Asylum for the Criminally Insane, now offering free tours to all elementary schools. Arkham Asylum for the Criminally Insane. You don't have to be crazy to work here, but it helps.
Good work.
Well, it's good that we're finally getting some sponsorships anyways. That's
good.
Great. Yeah.
All right, guys. Listen, industry news. I have a few things to talk about. I need your opinion. Apparently, Ghost Rider, the sequel. Ghost Rider.
Right.
Remember the Nicolas Cage movie, Ghost Rider?
Absolutely.
Yeah. The sequel is getting the 3D treatment, guys.
Oh, well, you know, a lot of movies are getting the 3D treatment.
Yeah, I think all movies are now getting the 3D treatment.
Yeah. You know, I'm not too sure if that's a good sign for the movie or not, because it seems like it's almost like a way of trying to get more viewers or more watchers to the movies for the movies, you know.
Well, the thing though with Ghost Rider is Sony, I think it's Sony Columbia,
right,
that have the Ghost Rider rights. They have it the license through Marvel, but it's that use it or lose it clause where
right.
And now I think Marvel, from what I would perceive, Marvel wants all these properties back. But they've hired these properties out years ago to companies like Sony. So Sony had a deadline in which to produce a movie, or the property goes back to Marvel.
Right.
And so this, to me, sounds rushed.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
And to me, the 3D sounds like a gimmick.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm sure they just want to get a movie out there so that they can retain the rights to the properties.
Well, and I'm sure that it'll only be about 1.5 minutes into the movie before we see the flaming skull being thrown directly at the audience, right?
Directly. Well, that's generous, Life. 1.5 minutes.
I'm guessing probably the opening credits.
Yeah, or something like that, yeah.
No doubt.
Well, you know what? All I hope for, I honestly hope for a good movie. That's what I hope for. I hope for that all comic properties produce good movies.
Is this going to be another Nick Cage movie?
Yeah, Nick Cage.
Is he back?
Yeah, Nick Cage is back. And
and we all have a soft spot for Nick Cage. Let's face it.
Well, listen, he named himself after a comic book character.
That's true. That's a very good point. Yeah. I don't know if a lot of our listening audience knows that story, though. You know, and as a comic book historian, I feel like I'm compelled to tell you these things, that Nicolas Cage actually got his name from Luke Cage, Hero for Hire, and he loved that name. So, of course, he really is a Coppola. He's actually Nicolas Coppola, but he loves...
I think if you dig deep, aren't... Isn't everyone in Hollywood a Coppola?
I think so.
Prolific family.
A prolific, yeah. And, of course, all the Coppolas love wine, so maybe that says something about the whole Hollywood industry too, right? Maybe they're all just a bunch of alcoholics. But if you're listening, a whole bunch of actors out there who want to be on the show, I never said any of this. And we'd love to have you on the show. But anyways, I digress, and we'd love to have Nick Cage on the show, really. So well, Nick, we love you, Nick Cage.
Nick, if you're listening, you're more than welcome on the show. And I really do want the Ghost Rider sequel to be a good movie, and that's good for comics. And what's good for comics is good for society. That's the way I look at it.
Right? Good for society. That's a very philosophical way of looking at things.
Right, and optimistic.
That was Walt the Benevolent speaking.
Yes, yes. All right. Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes, the animated series, debuts October 20th. Correct me if I'm wrong here, guys. This is my take on this.
I love correcting you when you're wrong.
Okay, good. You know, Marvel is hot. Marvel is a hot commodity. The Avengers are a hot property. The movie, Avengers the movie, takes a long time to kind of get through the whole system.
Sure.
An animated series you can get out quicker. Does an animated series rushing to market and taking advantage of all this excitement, will it help the movie? I mean, obviously, if it's good, right, it will help the movie. But, my question is, is there too much Avengers product coming to market all of a sudden? Or?
Is really, like, I don't even think that the Avengers animated series will have any impact on the movie. I don't think the same audience watches an animated movie as watches a mainstream Hollywood blockbuster.
Yeah, you know what? I think it's only good things, because I think you're going to have a lot of kids that are going to watch the animated series, and then they're going to be bugging their parents, and they're going to inform their parents
I think their parents are going to go anyways, because Iron Man's in it.
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right.
I mean,
yeah.
If anything draws people to an Avengers movie, it's the fact that Iron Man's going to be in it.
Yeah, for sure. And we've got the Thor movie coming out soon, and then we've got the Captain America movie coming out, and then eventually we're going to have the Avengers movie. And of course, with all that, we've got Scarlett Johansson and Robert Downey Jr. and Samuel L. Jackson.
I'm there, Scarlett Johansson. I'm there.
I had you at Scarlett Johansson.
All right, guys. So come on, rein it in.
Okay.
Now, Iron Man, Thor, Captain America, Hulk, Ant Man, Giant Man—they're all appearing in this Avengers miniseries, and guess what? Iron Man, Thor, Captain America, at least, big movies are coming out with them.
Go ahead. I don't mean to interrupt, but did you know that there was also an Ant-Man movie in the works as well?
You got it.
Come on.
Yes, there is. There's an Ant-Man movie in the works, I want to say the name Edgar Wright, the guy that directed the movie recently for Scott Pilgrim. He was initially attached to doing the Ant-Man movie. Of course, he was the same director who did Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead. Edgar Wright.
I was thinking Edgar Rice Burroughs.
He's interested in doing this Ant-Man movie, and I think he would have a great take on it, because I think he has a little bit of a comic flair to it, as well as that dry British sense of humor kind of thing. And I think that he'd be really great for an Ant-Man movie, because I don't think you could have a serious Ant-Man movie and you wouldn't want to have a comedic Ant-Man movie, because the character is too popular, is too entrenched in comics as well. Even though he's a bit of a second tier, but he's been around for so long, you don't want to treat him poorly.
Yeah. Well, he's actually, guys, he is the second Marvel superhero, per se. Like, technically speaking, he's the second introduced Marvel superhero in the chronology of the Marvel Age of Comics, which started with Fantastic Four in November of 1961. December of 1961, Marvel launched Tales to Astonish number 27, which introduced the Ant-Man.
Right.
And that is actually the second Marvel superhero.
You know, the thing I find so fascinating about the Marvel series of films is how so many second-tier characters have been the stars of Marvel films. You know, you have going back to, like, Blade and the Punisher. And,
you're right.
You know, you could even say Daredevil is a second-tier character, and Iron Man, really. These are not, like, the gigantic stars of the Marvel universe, and yet often it's those second-tier characters, Ghost Rider and so on, that have done really well for Marvel in Hollywood.
But if you do the movie right, you can actually turn a second-tier character into a first-tier character,
right,
which is what happens with Iron Man
now. But or you can do, what happened with Daredevil, which became almost, like, even worse.
Because
really, Daredevil was a second-tier character that was actually really good when it was written by guys like Frank Miller and Dave Mazzucchelli. And then all of a sudden they came out with a Daredevil movie, and all of a sudden nobody cared about it anymore, right?
Right, All right, guys, let's move on and keep with animation, though. And I want to inform you guys that All-Star Superman is getting the animation treatment, too. Grant Morrison, Frank Quietly's highly acclaimed series is being adapted into a PG-13 direct-to-DVD animated movie for Warner Brothers.
Well, you know, DC has been doing an awful lot of these direct to DVD movies. They've done a couple of Batman ones. They did a Wonder Woman one, a DC New Frontier one, a Green Lantern one. So there's all kinds of direct to DVD movies that have been coming out for DC, and clearly they've been doing well. I think one of the most interesting ones was they did this Batman one where it was all mini stories about Batman, but it was all done in an anime style, and it had really great stories and really great writing, and had characters like Deadshot in it, who you don't normally see very often in a sort of a Batman animated series. The ones that I don't know have translated very well, like as I mentioned earlier, was the DC New Frontier one. I thought it was good, but it really didn't do Darwin Cook's storytelling justice.
Right.
So I hope that with this new one that you're talking about, I hope it does Grant Morrison's and
Frank
Quitely's artwork justice as well.
All right. Well, I mean, what I like to see, and what I'm kind of happy about in a sense, is all the products that are coming to market. Obviously, Marvel believes, and it's the media, that there's varying media, right? Like, there's like, okay, feature film. It doesn't have to be feature film. Feature film steals all the glamour and thing, yeah. But you know what? You can get a good product in an animated series out,
sure.
too.
Yeah.
And there's so much property out there, and there's so much potential out there to get more property out to the viewing public.
Absolutely.
And that's what's happening right now. And both companies, the two big ones anyway, Marvel and DC, are doing their best, it seems, to get things out into the mainstream and get these things to viewers.
Walt, that's fascinating to me about trying to get this stuff out to the mainstream viewers, because when they do these direct DVD animated films, Who do you think the market primarily is for those films?
I think it's fanboys. I think because it's PG-13, so there's a bit of an edge to it and stuff like that. I think it's fanboys. I think it's 20-somethings. I think it's 30-somethings,
yeah.
Really. And I think that they're going to pass it on to their younger brother,
yeah.
or their nephew or their son. Right, and they're going to catch up on it. But the ones that are making that initial thrust to consume the thing are the older ones.
Yeah, absolutely,
right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Well, because they're the ones who are probably reading the comics and know about the DVDs that are coming out, right? I mean, your average 10-year-old isn't going to know about DC's New Frontier coming out, right?
Right.
So they're going to have to rely on their older brother or their father or whoever it happens to be to point out that these things are coming out.
Well, you know what? It raises another interesting point, which is that there's this whole new sort of delivery system for film and video, which is the iPad. And I wouldn't be surprised, and also, you know, like smartphones and so on, I wouldn't be surprised if part of the strategy behind putting movies like this into the marketplace is to address the next generation that wants to consume media on these mobile devices.
That you're absolutely right.
Good
you're absolutely
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
All right. Now, guys, we got to keep moving here. We got to keep moving. We have lots to cover, and of course, we have life to the feature of today is Life Peng. So, Chris, do you remember a month ago we had an article about a family somewhere in the United States facing foreclosure. They were packing up their possessions. The bank was taking over
yes,
their house.
Yes.
And in the basement, they found an Action Comics number one.
Yes, I remember the story. Yeah. Yes.
And they sent it to Metropolis Comics or Comic Connect. And they had it graded by the CGC company. It came back a 5.0 out of 10, which is somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
Anyway, it sold at auction this week.
Oh, it did, eh?
For $436,000.
Wow.
Yes. That is a beautiful story. So here you have a family being evicted. The states are in hard times. People losing their jobs and stuff. So the bank is taking over the house. These people are moving.
Yeah.
They find this book. They make a few phone calls. They're told that it's worth money. Now, from what I understand, Vince Zerzizzo, from Metropolis, actually had to interject and tell the bank not to foreclose, and actually had to kind of give a testimonial collateral that this book is actually worth money. Don't foreclose on these people. This book is actually worth money. In 2-3 months' time, they will get money.
They'll be okay. Yeah,
yeah, they will get money. And so this is a beautiful story. $436,000 from I think Comic Connect takes about a 10% commission. So these people are close to $400,000 in the plus.
That's amazing.
With this book, it's like divine intervention here, or what?
Yeah, incredible. And that was for a 5 out of 10, you were saying?
A 5.0 out of 10 for an Action Comics number one. So what I encourage everybody to do is to look in their basements. Oh, no, I'm going to retract. I'm going to look in their grandparents' basements or attics and email me.
But you know what's funny is, Procter & Gamble was in the Hamilton area. And, of course, Walter and I are from the Hamilton area, Hamilton, Ontario, for those of you who are listening overseas. Procter & Gamble was, in fact, one of the companies in the Hamilton area. And they had the original giveaway comic, Famous Funnies, back in 1933 or 32, I thought it was. But it could be anywhere around there. And so, you never know who might have an issue of Famous Funnies, in their basement, right?
And
so
or in their attic for these days.
A Famous Funnies, it's not an Action One. Comics are hierarchical in a sense. Superman rules the roost. That Action Comics number one is the most important comic book ever published.
Yeah.
Because it introduced the superhero genre, which went on to dominate comic books, and is still dominating comic books, 70 years later? So some people will say it hijacked the medium.
Oh, yeah. Totally, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But my point is, Famous Funnies number one in a 5.0 like this Action, my estimate is maybe $30,000-$40,000.
I would say that's probably about right. Yeah. I mean, the thing about that is that's the comic that sort of started the term comic book, right? Because it had a whole bunch of comic strips that were reprinted from the newspapers, and that's kind of gave the whole notion. I mean, Charlie Gaines years ago started Famous Funnies number one, and then his son later on went on to create Mad Magazine. But anyways, this is what really started the comic book craze. And so, this is something it's of important value. And it was a giveaway by Procter & Gamble. So those of you in the Hamilton area that have had homes for, decades, you never know what you could have in your basement. You might have something that's worth $30,000.
Again, I should give you my email.
Yes. Well, you know what? Allow me to do that for you. If you do, in fact, have a comic worth $30,000, or in case you just want to write and say hello to us, you're more than welcome to email us at mailbox@bigbcomics.com or chris.owen@mohawkcollege.ca to, drop us a line, let us know how you're doing. Or, in fact, if you want to tell Walt that you have a Famous Funnies number one and maybe you want to sell it to him.
Great. Chris, move on. I'm gonna try to squeeze one more industry news in. And this is great. This is a good story. A Comic Book Daily, which we take a lot of stories from, Comic Book Daily had a feature that you and I, Chris Wright, it's called Sleepy Censors.
Yes. Yes.
And what Chris and I do a little blog on Comic Book Daily is about comics that have maybe in the 1950s. Chris has an article on it coming up on the website. You can check it out at comicbookdaily.com. But basically, quickly is the U.S. Senate comes in the 1950s and says, hey, you know what? Comic books are too sexual. Comic books are too graphic. Comic books are just too. And we're going to put a Comics Code Authority in. And that the good guys have to always win. It has to be clean, wholesome fun for the kids.
Yeah.
Right. The thing, though, is the artists and the writers generally were the same, and they didn't like the restraints. So they subversively, hidden, they would put little innuendo, they would put kind of hidden meanings, hidden text, hidden drawings, hidden things into their covers and stuff.
Like, for example, you may see a swear word written in the tall grasses of some, a jungle comic or something.
Right, or you may see a phallic symbol where you don't think one belongs,
or
so on and so forth. So Chris and I did one about a specific comic called
It
was an Archie comic. And the cool thing about this is there was a gentleman that was selling on eBay one of these Archie comics that you and I did.
Yes.
And this thing was tattered. This thing was like it was through a laundry machine. And this thing wasn't worth that much money anyway.
I mean, what was it? I think you said it was worth like, well, $4.
$2 yeah. in that condition, yeah. according to the price guide, yeah. $2. And it was called Betty and Me number 16, if anybody wants to Google the cover. Betty and Me number 16. Anyway, the guy on his eBay auction references Chris's and my article on yeah. Comic Book Daily about why this comic is cool, and the thing sells for $51.75.
Wow.
So this is a comic that really should sell for about 50 cents,
right.
or $2 or something, and it's ended up selling for $50.
Right. So Chris has emailed the guy asking for $20.
I want my 40% cut. No, of course we didn't do that. But listen, we do – but speaking of comic books, as we are, of course, I do have another – you know, I figured we've got Life Peng here. And because we have Life Peng here, we have a special guest. How cool would it be to play our favorite theme song or favorite show of all time? And that is, of course, the one that you and I know and love, the Aquaman theme.
Aquaman. Aquaman. No one greater than Aquaman,
King of Atlantis, King of the sea. Where the danger is, that's where he'll be. Always defending you, yeah, you and me. Aquaman. He can swim faster than the fastest thing in the sea or on the land. Mira, his beautiful queen beside him, he'll fight with all his might till the end. Oh, you can always depend on mankind's truest friend, Aquaman.
That is just such a great song. I mean, that's one of my favorite songs. What surprises me is it wasn't covered ever. Like, you know, the Stones, yeah. You know, the Bee Gees or Lady Gaga or somebody.
I would love to hear Lady Gaga do a cover of that.
You know, we need a cover of Aquaman. Anybody...